is the New York State AFERD podcast entitled A through Z Health and PE. We are your co-hosts, Drs. C and C, the true Pan-American connection. I am Clancy Seymour, and my tag team partner is the one and only Dr. Victor Ramsey.
Details highlighting our episodes, guests, contact information, publications, and other useful resources will always be included in the podcast show notes. For more information about New York State AFERD, please visit newyorkstateaferd.org or Facebook and social media handles at New York State AFERD. Let's embrace the journey, and now, on to our show.
Greetings, listeners. I am Dr. Clancy Seymour with my co-host, Dr. Victor Ramsey, who will be joining us shortly. Welcome to episode 6 of the New York State AFERD A through Z Health and PE podcast. In this series of episodes, we invite graduate students from my summer capstone and contemporary issues in physical education classes at Canisius College. Students in this combined course are graduate teacher candidates on the verge of student teaching, aspiring physical educators, or newly inducted teachers into the profession themselves. We have asked students to review journal articles ahead of time to discuss accordingly. The articles we'll be chatting about today address educational policy, specifically in New York State, namely the Annual Professional Performance Review, otherwise known as the APPR, and the Common Core State Standards Initiative. So welcome. Okay, folks, we all had the chance to read the articles regarding teacher evaluation and Common Core State Standard. For our graduate students, please share your thoughts. For our listeners, please also briefly mention where you are in your journey, whether you're a teacher candidate, near student teaching, or you're an aspiring HPE professional, or even a newly minted teacher. Take it away.
I'm amazed that it's 2021 and we're still being evaluated using standardized tests that aren't even our subject.
It does seem bizarre that something like that even became common practice. I don't know. I wonder what the room was like in that meeting when someone said, why don't we just use math and English scores to decide how well our PE teachers are doing? Who piped up and said, yeah, that's a great idea. And the fact that I think it was something like between that and physical fitness outcomes, that accounted for something like 45% of the districts. That's how they did their 40% standardized assessment of the teacher evaluation. Yeah, I'm just getting a note here from Dr. Seymour. So my name is Brett Leader. I'm in the PE program here at Canisius. I coach swimming and diving at Victor High School in Victor, New York, which is where I live. I'll be doing my student teaching in the fall. Kind of getting back to that point, I think, like I said, between fitness testing and math and reading scores, that accounted for something like 45% of the districts using that as their standardized measures as part of the APR evaluation of their teachers. It seems pretty enormous percentage of the districts for two subject areas that really don't measure learning outcomes specifically.
Yeah, hi everyone. My name's Connor Doran. I also am a new graduate from Canisius College, and I have just recently got a health teaching position in the Canisteo-Greenwood City School District, so that's super exciting. Just to add on to Brett's point there, I think Dr. Seymour once said when we were in a class, it's kind of like evaluating a fish on its ability to climb a tree. It doesn't exactly align with what our goals are and what we're trying to instill in our students. So I definitely think that there needs to be a better way of incorporating evaluations on ourselves based on what we do and what we hope to bring to our profession and to the school districts.
Hi, I'm Abby Price. I'm going to be a student teacher in the fall. I am just wondering, does anyone know how we could advocate for ourselves as phys ed teachers to choose the assessment for our way of evaluating ourselves?
Hey guys, I'm Luke Federici. I will also be doing my student teaching in the fall. Abby, to kind of go off what you were saying, I feel like as physical educators, we constantly have to advocate for ourselves in our field, especially because with how people view our profession, and how it's seen as being a break for the regular teachers. And this kind of goes back to the assessment class we took with Dr. Seymour about using the multiple different ways to assess, whether it's formative or summative, And then being able to take all the data we're able to collect over the course of the year and even use our coworkers' data in district-wide, county-wide, whatever, however you want to take it, and being able to send it to the state level to be like, listen, this is how we're doing it, and try to get somewhat of a standardized system throughout like the state or at least in a region. And then we can kind of use that as a measurement for how we can get assessed, because everyone's kind of on the same level is how they assess this.
Well said, Luke. And so, you know, a couple things to clarify for our audience and listener. What we're chatting about, teacher evaluation, right? The annual professional performance for APPR, and all of you were asked to recording. And what are teachers in New York State being asked to do in regards or to comply with this policy? Well, they're using pre and post test logic, right? Ms. Price is the teacher at the beginning of the school year. Students are baseline tested at one point and then post tested at the end. And the growth, or perhaps the lack thereof, that occurs in between is attributed to Ms. Price as the PE teacher. So the articles that you were asked to review kind of talk about that policy and what poses the challenges in physical education. More thoughts?
Yeah, and I find that to be pretty concerning, because in the article it said that, I think it said like 95% of teachers find that they are going to be more likely to have students do badly on their pretest in order to have them look good on their post-test, which is scary because it's completely not what we want to do as teachers. We should be aiming for students to actually be growing and developing.
Yeah, it certainly ruins the validity of what we're trying to do. And having educators actually come out and say, yeah, I'm having my students sandbag at the beginning, not show their true abilities, just so there's data there showing that what they're practicing and what they're implementing in their curriculum is working and is showing improvement. It makes me uncomfortable. I don't appreciate that sentiment of it. But when you have administrators, when you have a system that is kind of, you know, designed for you to fail because of the way that you're evaluated, I definitely understand why some educators feel they need to do that. So it's kind of a difficult thing here.
I feel like that's also kind of where what the district teachers are into, because you can easily equate that back to the resources teachers have to use in their teaching. Whether it's, I mean, any teacher really doesn't just have to be phys ed. But if like a phys ed teacher doesn't have the necessary equipment or resources to provide a successful lesson to their students, along with their abilities, the growth is just not going to be there. So kind of going back to what Abby was saying is, we need to find a way to advocate so all phys ed teachers have the necessary tools that they have in order to give students quality lessons that will show growth once they get to those post-tests.
And what's even, Dr.
No, no problem. Excellent. I just want to add to Abby's point and Luke's point real quick. And Abby asked a question, well, how do we advocate? How are these decisions made? And then Luke adds on to that and says, you know, we have to provide the tools. Well, that's the interesting caveat. The policy itself does allow local school district provision. So each school district decides, but how do we provide the conditions? That's the million-dollar question I think Luke is getting to, and that points to validity. So Abby, I'm sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
Oh, I was just going to mention, I think that I read in one of the articles on the APPR, it said that funding was determined on student growth, was it not? And I just don't understand how we are going to be able to offer our students resources that they need to grow if we have to have them grow to get the resources.
Excellent point, Abby. And that kind of speaks to what Connor's talking about, the sandbagging, right? If the system is set up for growth to be rewarded, what do we do with those students that are at the top of the pyramid or at the top of the curve, at the one end of the curve, or perhaps on the bottom end of the curve? What does the literature tell us?
Yeah, Dr. Seymour, to touch on that, a lot of athletes who are going to be your higher performing students and, you know, say fitness testing or just any sort of physical test, those sometimes are the students who maybe don't try as hard in physical education because maybe they don't have to, or maybe they have a game at the end of the day, or whatever their circumstance is, that can definitely play a role in your evaluation as well, which I don't think is fair. But also if they're excelling and they're doing well, that's like, it's okay. You know, like that shouldn't be an issue. It's kind of like a student being a few grades ahead of their reading level and being like asked to write an essay that's less, you know, intelligent compared to their potential. It doesn't make any sense.
I'm not sure, but I think one of the things Abby was touching on there too, and I'm going to lead into a question I have for you, Dr. C, but is the fact that if they are using this criteria as a method of determining how they're going to allot resources, and they're deciding that the areas of the school districts that are showing the most growth are going to receive the most resources, it's almost a backwards way to do it, right? I think that's what you were trying to get at, Abby, of we're requiring the growth before we provide the resources to foster the growth in the first place. This was probably in the article, Sarah. Can you talk about the whole flow chart from the federal Race to the Top initiative all the way down to resources getting distributed to schools? And is the APPR designed in response to a need for some sort of evaluative criteria for that Race to the Top initiative? Or are they linked a little more lately?
Yes. Question, Brett. So the RTTT Race to the Top initiative was prompted by federal Department of Education dollars, prompting states to amend or reform educational policy regarding teacher evaluation and teacher certification. So while Abby's claim is accurate that in order for school district to receive, quote unquote, show me the money, right, they have to have these new measures in place. It's not necessarily that cut and dry. It's more that in order for states to receive RTTT dollars, they have to change their teacher evaluation policy. And that's what New York State, alongside many other states, have now done.
Is it accurate, though, that the school districts that are showing more growth, however they're measuring it, whether that's erroneous or accurate or not, are receiving majority of the funding? Is that how that works in terms of dispersion or no?
Not quite. But overall, states have to have these new policies in place to demonstrate value-added models for teachers.
That makes sense. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, very good question. So some other things to consider regarding the policy itself. What does history tell us? Or perhaps what regarding the APPR study conducted and complying with the policy, what are PE teachers doing to comply?
Hello, my name is McKenna Peloth. I am a grad student at Canisius College. And in regards to the value added models, I feel like this approach is putting tremendous pressure on physical educators to change, to adapt to a system that goes against how they view physical education. So they're changing how they would normally assess students in order to fit the system, and therefore, because they want to receive a good teacher effectiveness review, because the value-added models is a way of like reviewing teacher effectiveness.
That's it. That's the key, isn't it? Teacher effectiveness. So what are school districts doing? What is the number one reported assessment utilized under this?
Wasn't it the cognitive test?
The cognitive test. Okay. Yes. So that's number one. What's number two?
Fitness testing.
Okay. And what's number three?
Math and reading scores
from standardized tests that are not even a part of physical education. And then last but not least, coming up in the rear.
Performance criteria.
Performance-based, right? So the test that we might default to the most in PE is being used the least in response to the policy itself. So that speaks to McKenna's point about, is the policy de facto changing, perhaps whether PE teachers want it to change or not, potentially the purpose of physical education or state and other. Interesting.
So I think some of the fallout of that mentioned in the article is that the de-emphasis of psychomotor development, because it's the most difficult and least used criteria of assessment, which is really kind of PE's strength, you know, apart from the fact that it can address and assess in all three domains where other subjects can't. It's probably the only subject that there's any real psychomotor development And if the system's being set up to incentivize, you know, de-emphasis of that, I think we're losing one of the strongest pillars that our profession's really built on, being taken out from under us.
Excellent, Brett. I mean, you've nailed it for sure. It's concerning. I mean, the good news is, you know, and that kind of segues into maybe perhaps the second article a little bit about the valuing of or ranking of the importance of standards and how it relates and how it connects back to it. It appears that while PE teachers are certainly being pressured, given the policy, their views have not changed. So that's an important distinction for sure. The other key caveat to this is the history. Again, you know, this is not the first time these types of measures have been deployed in the past. We've learned, and history tells us the same types of ramifications for sure. Any other thoughts about the APPR?
Yeah. So you mentioned standards, and I was wondering if how we learned about standard-based grading this past week in our capstone class. I was wondering, do you think that would possibly help us to be able to succeed in all the evaluations other than the mathematics and ELA tests, obviously, because that has nothing to do with us?
That's a good question, Abby. I mean, standards-based grading is a little bit different and more nuanced when it comes to this policy itself. I mean, this policy is asking PE teachers and all classroom teachers, for that matter, to come up with pre and post-test logic to measure their attributed growth. So whether a school district has standards-based practices in place or not, it's troubling in a lot of ways. To what Luke was referring to, conditions. I don't think we want to mistake good practitioners from being weary of teacher evaluation, but we, as Connor brought up, we want to make sure the test is valid and accurate. Any other thoughts about that?
It makes me wonder how much, like how Connor mentioned the conditions, how much this could relate to topics such as social injustice and how many schools that are urban and have a colored population, mostly colored population, struggle to receive the resources they need.
There is no question that there are social justice implications of policies like this. And as Luke pointed out or asked the bigger question, I will come back to it. Is this measuring teacher effectiveness? Actually, what McKenna was asking too, is this measuring how good McKenna is as a potential teacher? Or would this policy perhaps be measuring something else?
I think it could kind of go both ways a little bit. Obviously, if you're looking at the pre and post test, you're looking for the development and the progress of the student. So really, in that aspect, it could show, is McKenna a good enough teacher to enable her students or provide her students with the ability to learn new things and to grasp the concepts in order to progress? And at the same time, going back to the students, it's between the pre and post test, do they have the motivation to get better and to learn new things or want to learn new? I would honestly say it's kind of a 50-50 toss-up between whether it's on the students or the teacher there.
Others, what do you think?
I agree with Luke. I think that, you know, having those relationships with your students and being able to get into their lives a little bit and help them make themselves better people and better athletes and just more healthy and well people in general, that's on you, but it's also on the student to, you know, take to that and to give them your effort as well if you're showing them that respect and that love.
Thanks, Connor. So before we continue, we have Dr. Ramsey, my wonderful co-host here, who's joined us. Welcome, Dr. Ramsey.
Thank you for having me, folks. I was just on another Zoom meeting. Welcome. I'm going to briefly tell you, if you don't know already, but I'm Victor Ramsey. I work in the New York City Department of Education Office of School Wellness Programs. I am a 33-year veteran with the Department of Ed. Started as a teacher, dean, assistant principal, regional director of fitness, and I'm now an educational administrator who supports teachers with trainings and reviewing curricula, things of that nature. I'm also an adjunct assistant professor at City University of New York, York College, Department of Human Health and Human Performance, a past president of the EDI section of New York State AFRD. And again, it's an honor and a privilege, and I'm humbled to be here with you today to share as much information as you can. And I heard great things about you, so I'm looking forward to this time together. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Dr. Ramsey. Always a pleasure, my friend. We're just chatting and kind of wrapping up the first article about the APPR, what to think about how they're evaluated. And what I've asked our HP professionals and student teachers about is, are policies like the APPR problematic because they don't necessarily measure teacher effectiveness, but are perhaps measuring something else? And what are the social implications of policies like the, and again, my co-author and myself who wrote the article really dove into that a little bit towards the end, where we talk about poverty and the idea that, do these policies not in fact address teacher effectiveness, but address perhaps something far bigger than what the student brings to the equation, or for that matter, the teacher brings. And our listeners, many PE professionals on board in New York State probably feel the same way. It's not that teachers, and particularly quality physical educators, are against teacher evaluation. It's back to what Connor mentioned. I'm sure any great PE teacher, and there are so many in New York State and a part of New York State AFERD, would welcome teacher evaluation. It's making sure that the teacher evaluation is valid. That's the $1 million piece.
Yeah, good point. In fact, some people may argue also that self-evaluation might be another alternative for some people also, you know, creating that sense of self-evaluation, i.e. reflection, reflecting on our practices, reflecting on what is it that we're delivering to students. So absolutely, I do agree wholeheartedly with that comment that was made, that there could be other, and by the way, moving forward, there could be other variables that could come into play that we may not even consider. Oops, I didn't think about XYZ variable, or something that might pop up as we thinking about evaluation or validating the work or instructional practices. So very important point. Much appreciate that. Yep, indeed.
Any other thoughts? So how about the second article that takes the perspectives, takes that information, that data from the first study and starts to connect it to the ranking of our national standards? There's good and bad to that article. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think as we mentioned before, it said in the second article that most teachers still feel as though they believe standard 5 is the most important, but they have to teach to other standards for it to look as though the students are improving, though they are benefiting, and completely forget the most important standard in their eyes. So it kind of links to what we were saying earlier, how we are having to abandon our beliefs in order to be seen as growing, as our students are growing.
Well said.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the two standards that were cited as being most important to at least a pretty large percentage of those teachers polled were that they were working in the effective domain. And I think some of the least important were in the cognitive domain. And yet when you look at the assessment measures of the way that we have to establish the assessment criteria, they're pretty heavily skewed towards cognitive assessment and away from psychomotor and affective. So like Abby said, it's almost the inverse of where we should be focusing our attention, because I suppose just out of perhaps convenience, or hopefully nothing more nefarious than that, but convenience of paper and pencil testing on being able to establish, you know, pre and post test scores.
Well said, Brett. And, you know, it's hard to not to only think about this and not speak about, again, back to the original article and what prevails with the APPR. Well, the written test, the fitness test, and we all know why a fitness test can be problematic. And what is last, what is least used? The performance-based assessment. But yet, if you ask the PE teachers what assessment they would use without the APPR, what prevails? It completely, as Brett points out, it's inverted, right? It's the performance-based assessment. So whether we like it or not, the policy is dictating a different direction. And the good news about the second article is, at least right now, PE teachers' views are steadfast and what is important in physical education.
You know, many, many years ago, there was a term, you might be familiar with this, the hidden curriculum. And I mean, that's made me think about, you know, we know what's right, you know, what direction we should be going. But sometimes we have to be either suppress and or pressured by the powers that be to set the standards that we have to now kind of follow suit, you know. So I see your point about the going against the grain, and as Brett stated, the position that we will have to take in order to get something done. And again, we know that something may not go hand in hand with the other, but we have to do the best that we can and be strategic in that approach. Be strategic.
Well, was it about 2012 this APPR was implemented? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah.
Somewhere around
there. Right. Yes. That sounds so about right.
What sort of teacher evaluation procedures were in place prior to that? Do you feel, we're all new, so we didn't see the last 30 years. Do you feel it was more effective, less effective than what we have now? We've taken a step.
Well, more direct, and Dr. Ramsey can help me with this, but certainly more direct observation. And direct observation is still part of the process.
Yeah.
And the APPR, while the mandate is still in place, some of the original measures are not as stringent as they once were propositioned. So that's good. But generally speaking, direct observation was in place. And still in place.
Right. And I recall in my young age, this died, by the way, folks. I remember my younger age or a career. I recall principal said, I thought I did a great job with this. And principal said, just keep in mind, and you remember this always, there's always room for growth. You know, and I never forgot that. I said, okay, she's right. In our minds, this was picture perfect, but it's never that way. There's always room because you have someone externally watching, observing as we did in the past. So just keep that in mind as you move forward. And I'm glad you asked these questions because these are things that will come up, and these are opportunities that you may fall under, and your ability to navigate is very effective.
Well said, Dr. Ramsey, my friend. Another question that I want to bring up to the group regarding this article, and it's been in terms of my growth. One limitation was asking PE teachers to rank the standards. Anybody want to elaborate on the discussion that we posed in that article?
I think, are you talking about some of the limitations you cited in the article? So one of the ones that I remember, I'm sure there are more, but ranking, you're just ranking them 1 through 5, or maybe it was 1 through 6, but it doesn't give an idea of what the actual gap between those are in their opinion. So if it's 5 standards, then they're all taking up 20% of your headspace, whereas one may be taking up 80 and then the other 4 split the last 20. You know what I mean? In terms of just importance. So it's not as accurate a measure perhaps as having the teachers rank each standard on a scale of 1 to 100 separately in terms of importance or something like that. It kind of pigeonholes them into designating them as all equal value into discrepancy.
Thank you, Brett. Anyone else remember some of the discussion regarding the limitations? Well, the reason why I bring it up, and Brett hits the nail on the head for one point, from a statistical standpoint, a ranking items on a survey don't consider magnitude in between items, right? So that proposes a statistical conundrum when it comes to evaluating that data. So that's an important point. But the other piece to it that we learned when conducting the study was that Shape America, indicates that these standards are not to be prioritized, not to be put in some sort of hierarchy. That flies, asking PE teachers to do that flies in the face of the perhaps what may be the considered part of the objectives of the standards, which are to obviously cater a PE program around all, not just some. Thoughts about that?
I feel like they should not be prioritized because I feel like what Shape America is trying to get at is that all of school districts are going to be different. Like a rural district may prioritize standard 4 over standard 3 because that's what works best for that school district.
Absolutely. And a good point there. McKenna, did I say that right? McKenna?
Yes.
Yes. Good point.
That's right.
Right. Okay. That's a very good point. And that's the reason why as physical educators, we should have a seat, as they say, a seat at the table to help determine some of those priorities and what we believe might be the right direction that our school districts, never know, you could be at the school district level and or schools, right? In our environment. So I appreciate you bringing that up because this, again, brings us back to a topic we covered yesterday on professional involvement. And this is a very good example of being part of that process so that you can have that voice, that leadership voice.
I think maybe another, just to jump in, I know you're about to say something there, but in terms of you know, some of the pitfalls perhaps of ranking the standards, it seems to me like the standards as a whole, like you said, probably a situation where, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, that each of them work really well in conjunction with one another, but in isolation, perhaps none of them are going to achieve any kind of desired results. So by ranking them, you're forcing people in their minds, at least, to deprioritize some over others. Which could affect negatively the effectiveness of the other standards if not used.
Excellent point, man. Excellent point. Yes, indeed.
Agreed. And you know, in Brett's case and obviously McKenna as well, in this study we conducted, we tried to get to some of those answers in our research questions about, are there certain school types of school districts that prioritize certain standards over others? And better yet, as a result of the APPR, are we seeing a difference in that prioritization as a result of that policy? So that speaks to what certainly McKenna is chatting about. And you know, you've heard me say it many times before, excellence is a journey, right? And this was a learning endeavor for me as one of the researchers in this study. I learned quickly that asking PE teachers to prioritize or rank these standards was problematic for the various reasons we've chatted. However, and the reason why I ask you is I learned that, well, before I even get there, just still being the devil's advocate, nevertheless, we did it, right? And what did we find out? We had PE teachers ranked standard 5, not standard 1. Standard 5 is the most important, the effective domain. Maybe standard 3 as number 2. Interesting, nevertheless. And then the other thing to think about regarding our 5 national standards, 2 of those standards are effective domain oriented. That's noteworthy, okay? But back to what I was gonna chat about, and again, learning is a what's the old saying, Dr. Ramsey?
It's a quest until ellipsis.
Exactly.
To the end.
Birth quest. To the grave, right? Always. So something I've learned in the last couple of years from Dr. Peter Hasty, Auburn University.
Wow.
These standards, originally created by Shape America, were created on a hierarchy to be prioritized. From a historical and origin context, they were originally envisioned to be prioritized. So interesting that now the research comes full circle. So while problematic and maybe a limitation, the original standards were expected to be prioritized and catered to the psychomotor domain. So that's a Jeopardy question for you down the road, either by Aaron Rodgers and others alike, but nevertheless, you get my drift. Okay, so good discussion. Let's move on to the last article, the Common Core State Standards. What are your thoughts about that article? Again, educational policy, but now a different flavor, our Common Core State Standards. And certainly losing some momentum and traction over the last couple of years, but still a talking point.
So I graduated high school in 2014. So I got out of there just in time to miss the Common Core, thankfully. So I don't really have any experience with it as a student, but just kind of hearsay from. But it was no surprise physical activity rates declined when they implemented math. It's a pretty significant finding, but the article was pretty interesting regarding that. And I think for a reason we're starting to withering away of core.
Thanks, Lord. Appreciate that. And you know, shameless plug for myself and my co-researchers to try to investigate the influence of Common Core on physical activity rates in PE programs in New York State. So that's what we certainly endeavored to try to discover. Thank you.
So to just quick question. So with the study, it was looking at like the number of steps for physical activity while students were doing math or ELA problems, correct? I just kind of want to just kind of clarify. So when looking at being able to include math or English into physical education, can't that also, in whatever other Common Core subject you want to throw in there, couldn't that also fall on the creativity of the teacher to be able to think of a way to incorporate math, English, and do word problems or solve certain equations while students are active? I know my mentor, teacher Todd Sweeney, at his school, they have the traverse wall. And I know there's different types of materials for the wall you can do. So it could be a whiteboard or a chalkboard. So I know if you wanted to incorporate like math, you could put problems all over the board. And as students are going across the wall, they have to solve it before moving on. So how much was when you guys looked at that study as far as steps, like did you guys look to see what was actually done? Or was it just like students had to go up to a wall just or have like a written problem or something, do the problem, solve it, or read something, and then move on to the next thing. Because if you're able to incorporate some type of movement at the same time as having kids think, I think you can keep the physical activity up.
I just want to piggyback off of Luke really quick. I know in that article, one of the considerations talked about possibly one having different Common Core tasks being used could have different effects on the physical activity levels. So depending on what Common Core task was implemented in the lesson, maybe one would work better than another, resulting in different physical activity levels.
Yeah, I just to go off that and what Luke was saying and McKenna was just saying, I think that, as we all know, like growing up, if you play a game and it would have a story behind it, the physical activity that you do in that game is going to be disguised a little bit, because you're thinking about the concept of, okay, if you're animals, or if you're pretending that you're going through a pirate adventure, or just any sort of backstory that you have for a game. And then, oh yeah, you include squats and you include running and you include all these activities. Students who are less likely to just go out and do them for exercise would be more likely to participate more, because they're not thinking about the exercises that they're doing. They're thinking about the game and the backstory and all of the other details.
Connor, I think that's a really good point. It definitely relates to what Luke's saying, like with the creativity part. Because if a teacher isn't creative with implementing these types of ELA and math problems and all that in their class, it's going to lower the students' desire to go to phys ed. And then ultimately, the affective domain is all over the place then, and everything gets messed up within there. So I definitely agree with you, Luke, that creativity is a big part of this.
I mean, it was a pretty small sample study, right? It was one teacher running one 6-class unit. So I don't think this study was meant to, you know, preclude the notion that improvements could be made if this was going to remain a part of the curriculum or anything. But I don't know. I assume adding any sort of component that's unrelated in its root to the learning outcomes is going to make it more difficult. Right? I'm sure you could overcome it with creativity, and certain units probably more easily than others. But I'd be curious about the other side of this research, and I'm sure it exists. does adding ELA components to phys ed classes improve student reading scores at all? Is it necessary? Is it something that's useful to them in other areas, or is it just something we're trying to plug into every class for the sake of it? I don't know that answer. I'm sure that's out there. That's something I've reasoned myself, but you know, it seems like, and I think maybe we'll talk about in a few moments some limitations to this particular study, but if those sorts of trends hold, you know, you would really probably need to be seeing some sort of massive effect on the other side to offset the loss in moderate to physical activity time in the only slot of time, you know, during the day or during the week that these kids really get to do that in a school setting. I think that'd be an important thing to kind of weigh before you just go about trying to figure out better ways to implement it. Is even worth exploring before.
I believe that's why it's important to always incorporate academic language in physical education. So academic language could serve as a great tool for us to, while not going too in depth, as you pointed out, Brett and Luke, but more at least you tapping into some area of you know, academia from the ELA standpoint, meaning using that academic language. So I'm hearing you talk, I thought about the open phys ed guidelines, the curriculum per se, and they use the academic language task cards and things of that nature while engaging students. So I thought about that as you were talking.
Some great points. So let's come to Luke's question first, innovation. I think in the article, we try to address that asking PE teachers to integrate Common Core should not be confused with asking E teachers to take an interdisciplinary approach. That approach has been around for, that philosophy has been around for quite some time.
I was about to say that, a long time. Yes.
So that's something to consider. Now, Luke asked the question about, is it ELA math? In this particular study, it was ELA integration only, as per what the Common Core provisions have in place in New York State for PE teachers. However, the literature suggests something altogether different, that when PE teachers take on an interdisciplinary approach, what's one of the disciplines they tend to embed in PE? Anyone?
Wouldn't it be science with body parts research?
Science, perhaps, or mathematics, right? Science or mathematics. So this speaks to what Dr. Ramsey's chatting about. We have a policy in place asking PE teachers to integrate the Common Core State Standards into their classroom, whether we agree or disagree, whether we agree or disagree that interdisciplinary approaches in PE are valuable. But the policy is asking PE teachers to integrate ELA. Yet for quite some time, mathematics, and perhaps as Ms. Price brings up, science has been a sub or been subjects that have been integrated in PE willfully by PE. So this speaks to what Dr. Ramsey is chatting about, which is these policies are being developed without
consultation of the experts or the people who know. So Ms. Price, Abby, right? So yeah, science. I recall teaching and consulting with a science teacher regarding the heart rate. And I would say to the students, I said, after you check your heart rate after this activity, you'll find out, you'll see how effective you can answer the questions in Ms. Nelson's class. That was like my little hook back then when I was a new teacher. I use little strategies like that just to say that. And yes, we did it. Absolutely. To your point. Absolutely. Never were consulted. And that's to read that seat at the consultant with regard to the expertise. Clearly, mathematics, we did that. Counting. And don't even go into talking about bilingual education when we counted in different languages and all that different stuff. So that's another conversation. But just want you to know that your point is duly noted, that science was essentially what we did. And we did this. We didn't call it, obviously, this back then, but we did this. We did this work.
Other thoughts about the ramifications of this study?
Mr. Ramsey, you mentioned the bilingual thing. I was just thinking how beneficial, how a study on implementing ELA in phys ed classes for English as second learner students, if that would be more beneficial or if it would just confuse them further to the point where the physical activity would be taking a back seat. I thought that would be a really cool thing to see.
Yeah, that was that's a good observation, good point that you're making. I sat through and watched one of the new, we have a program called not PE Initiative. It's a PE Initiative where we hire people who were individuals who were in other career paths that want to be. So they do this whole process of getting, you know, learning physical education, of course, terminology, the science behind everything that we do. And then we train them. So I went in to observe a class that in Washington Heights. I happened to be Panamanian, so I speak, read, write Spanish fluently. So I was able to go in and observe students. But then I thought about the physical literacy part, you know, and then other things that came into play. And when I saw the students engaging with the teacher, I thought about, you know, how they have to look to mimic another student. So how would that pan out with a study to see how effective having the physical education lessons or anything in their native language and or an incorporation of something that they can connect with as far as their language barrier, if there's any. So yeah, I would not see it being a different study. In fact, I just translated and I'm getting it validated instrument that I use for my study on student attitude. I translate to Spanish. And one of the terms rather that are used is the word, if I ask you in English, what excites me about physical education? How would you answer that question? Oh, the activities, my teacher, the environment. But if you ask a Spanish-speaking student, the word excite takes a different meaning. So that's very important for us to notice. So when we talk about academic language translation, we have to be extremely cautious with. So I had to revisit that word and think about other words that are sort of like a universal that could replace it and still yield the same results that I'm hoping to get. Because I plan to do the study in Mexico, Puerto Rico, Panama. So I want to be able to validate this stuff very effectively. So great question. You know, I might be able to have you help me with the data collection. No.
Take me to Mexico. I'll go.
Oh, wait, there you go.
Thank you, Dr. Ramsey. Awesome. So
I just want to ask a question, if I may, for this
sure.
Group, because it seemed like a very astute group here. If you were to be the person responsible to be on that table to decide on a teacher evaluation process, to your point about evaluating, what kind of items would you consider that an administrator or administrator should look for? Go ahead, Connor, or anybody. Jump in, Connor. You're first.
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually going to bring that up in a minute here when we were wrapping up. I wanted to bring that back into the conversation. It's funny you said that. In phys ed, in my experience, and a lot of people that I know in the phys ed profession, one of the things we prioritize, obviously at the elementary level, it's about motor development and they're learning how to move their bodies still. But at the end of the day, the overall physical education program from K through 12, the goal is to have the students find something that they enjoy to do as an activity to maintain their healthy lifestyle, right? So if we did some sort of a post survey or something at the end of their high school experience and saying, like, in what ways did phys ed kind of motivate you to continue to do activities? Why or why not? And questions like that, asking, okay, what games did you learn? What types of activities did you do that you plan on continuing after school is over, like on your own time? I think if we can show that there are more and more students finding new activities that they will continue on in their own lives and pursue physical activity more, I think it would really show the value of what we're doing more than anything else.
So one of those questions that I'm hearing is how did physical education impact your life, and perhaps how could you apply this to your personal life or perhaps professional life somehow? Because eventually preparing them for the workforce. That's
yeah. Or like, are you going to continue to seek out activity in your life? Like,
and why? And make this a qualitative approach to explaining, the narrative. Okay. Anyone else?
Connor, I actually think that's a really interesting idea. I feel like it would be awesome evidence to advocate for our profession, to show that we actually make a difference in their lives and that we are promoting the physical literacy of our students and we are making a difference. I think that would be a cool idea to implement.
Yeah, I think even beyond that, as opposed to surveying the students at the end of the year about what they're going to do, figuring out some way to actually survey students 4 years, 8 years, 12 years post high school, what they have been doing. if there's alumni departments that stay in, or alumni networks that stay in touch in terms of organizing reunions and things like that, I think it'd be easier to do today than any time in history with social media and the fact that everyone's connected all the time, to start getting some of that, even if it wasn't used formally in terms of like teacher evaluation, just to get an idea of, you know, identifying aspects of PE curriculums that are yielding positive results for 8-12 years down the line, as opposed to, you know, what students think their lives are going to look like when they finish high school. But in terms of the root of the idea, I think it's really great, Connor. It was a great thought.
Thank you, folks. Great stuff. So parting words before we wrap up, last question of the day. Why have Dr. Ramsey and I asked you to read these articles? Why is it important to understand educational policy, not only from the standpoint of the policy itself, but understanding the ramifications from a social justice context and other points as well? Why?
To understand what we're getting ourselves into and how we can make a change also.
Good.
As of right now, going into the profession, this is how we are going to be evaluated. And if we are not okay with it now, then we need to be able to do something and be advocates for PE to change that.
Yeah, I've heard the phrase advocate for ourselves a few times. I think it was actually one of the first questions that was asked when we started talking about the first article. And Dr. Ramsey, you mentioned, you know, consulting the experts before creating educational policy. And it seems like in a lot of these areas, that's just not being done or not being done adequately enough. So getting back to that root question, how do we get a seat at that table? What steps do you need to take to advocate for these changes in Albany and where they're coming from? They're not coming from our districts, they're coming from state legislation. And so it needs to be dealt with at that level.
Start at the microcosm, your little island. If the actions speak louder than words. We just awarded a teacher, Big Apple Teacher of the Year. And this young lady was in a bad situation where she came to a new school and she just flourished, and the rest is history. And this young lady is going to have a seat at the chancellor's table to be able to speak about physical education because the chancellor was there. So little steps. And you have to persevere and don't give up. You have to persevere. And that's how you can get to that absolute perseverance.
A wonderful way to conclude. And my only piece that I would add, and you'll see the similar theme throughout all three articles as we wrapped up the narratives. And that was, if we don't know, if we don't learn, then we can't be at the table because we're ignorant.
Good point.
We need to be able, before we can get be at that table, we need to understand, we need to educate ourselves to be able to advocate properly and appropriately. That's it.
And I like how you initially said you reference Hasty, and you should be able to do this effectively, folks, knowing this now. Reference, and it's not, you reference according to in 2010, in 2013, 2020, and that's a way of doing that advocacy.
Well done. So with that, on behalf of New York State AFER, Dr. Ramsey, and all of our members, we would like to thank the graduate students of the college for joining us this evening to share their thoughts and perspective.
This session will be posted on the New York State AFER website as the 6th episode on our podcast channel. Stay tuned for episode 7, where we will continue this project with more graduate students. Please visit us on the NewYorkStateAFER.org website, social media handles at New York State AFER, or call us at 315-823-1015 for more information. And please mark your calendars. Please mark your calendars for our return to the Turning Stone, November 8th to 21st, 2021, New York State AFER Conference.
Thank you, everybody.